finally I decided that I really had to be somewhere where the music industry was. And that's when I started traveling back and forth between Seattle, which is my hometown, Seattle, mm-hmm. Washington, and Los Angeles, California, because that's where all the music was happening.
Yeah.
And after making a few of those trips and trying to, you know, schedule meetings to on a weekend, like I still had a day job. So,
but you had to have a lot of knowledge prior to like getting into the whole amp building stuff. I mean, I don't have knowledge about the electrician's tasks to say, you know, I have no idea about that kind of stuff. So you must have had some talent. You must have had some insight into how to go about doing this.
Well, I taught myself. I'm self-taught. So when I really started getting interested in this stuff, like say in the early 80s, like say 79, 80, 81, around that time, I knew roughly, again, just from taking, you know, high school physics classes and stuff, I knew how a vacuum tube worked.
Yeah.
And always being interested in mechanical and electronic and scientific things, I knew how a vacuum tube amplifier worked. I knew the principles, but I didn't really know anything about designing or building my own. I mean, I could look at a schematic and know what was going on, but
yeah.
You know, how to choose what value resistor to use, that was totally a mystery to me. So what I did is I started reading all these old Navy radio manuals that I could check out from the Seattle Public Library. And then I would read some old 1950s electronics textbooks from, you know, college electronics courses. Of course, all this stuff by 1980 was obsolete technology, but the books were still in the library system, so I was able to access them. And so I really just plunged myself into this stuff like full time. I would work my day job, I would come home, have a little dinner, and then I'd stay up for another 6 to 8 hours, like till, you know, 1 or 2 in the morning, reading and tinkering. I had a little workbench I set up in my bedroom where I, you know, I bought an inexpensive oscilloscope, and I would, you know, had a breadboard. I would assemble a circuit on the breadboard, and I would hook up my scope, and I would look to see what that did, and see what happens when I changed resistors. And then I just kind of tinkered with it until I finally got a good understanding.
This whole entire process, how long did it take? I mean,
well, it took me 4 years, 5 years to really get it, you know, to really start feeling like I had confidence to do this, right? And so during that time, though, even before I was fully confident of what I was doing, I actually was modifying some amps for some of my guitar customers, you know, and I would be like, I would tell them up front, like, you know, I'm still kind of figuring this stuff out, but, you know, if you're willing to let me take a shot at it, I could always put it back the way it was, you know? And so I would start modifying some little 50-watt Fender Bassman heads and Marshalls, because Marshalls were really easy to modify, and they lent themselves well to modifications. They responded well to the mods. And so during this time, I was doing these mods, and I was kind of, every mod sounded a little bit different, but they all sounded pretty good, I thought. But I learned from those differences. I learned which ones I liked, which ones I not so much. And so when I went to design my own amp, I already had a lot of this stuff sort of figured out in my mind, like what it had to do and what I wanted it to do.
Yeah.
So by the time, like I say, by the time I had about 4 years into this, I was feeling pretty confident that I knew what I was doing. You know, I still had a little bit of fleshing out to do, like, you know, I had to actually build the thing and then, you know, fine tune it. But at least I felt confident enough to go and have a transformer set made, to bend up a sheet metal chassis, because that comes from my metalworking skills. And I just laid the thing out and I started building, and I fine tuned it and I tweaked it for about a year, year and a half. And the end result is what became the SLO 100.
This is like the
SLO 100 lead overdrive.
The SLO 100 is like this, how to say this, it's like an eternal blueprint that you're trying to approach some kind of perfection, right? I mean, you redesigned the entire thing over and over, not entirely redesigned it, but you you know what I mean? It's like the slow 100 is like the yeah, the gift that keeps on giving.
Yeah, well, it is. I mean, I feel that. I mean, I think that it's, I feel fortunate. I feel grateful that the sound that I had in my head happened to be a sound that many, many guitarists appreciate. So yeah. When I finally realized that sound that I was trying, like say originally just to develop for myself, I really, at the very beginning, I had no real interest in doing this as a commercial venture. It was really just for me. But when it turned out the way it turned out, and with the interest I was getting in the amp mods and everything else, then I was like, you know, I think I really do have something here that others would enjoy and appreciate. And that's when I really thought, okay, this is it. We can do this. And so I just took a blind leap of faith and went for it, you know?
This is like, we're talking between Seattle and Los Angeles in the 80s, right?
Yeah.
So, I mean, for me, like now as a, I'm not the youngest anymore, but I'm in my 30s and it's 2021. The Los Angeles and Seattle in the 80s is like, it's a very obscure time frame for me and for many in my age, you know, it's like.
Oh, sure. Yeah. You were just a kid then.
I mean, 85.
Was, actually, your parents were just kids then.
Yeah. Exactly. So, I mean, that you were around in those times. It must have been a very special time. I mean, how do you feel about when you think back at the Seattle in the 80s? I mean, when I think about Seattle, I think about, you know, the 90s and grunge and this kind of dirty authenticity. But there was something prior to that in the 80s. And I don't know, maybe you can enlighten
me. Yeah, well, the Seattle, I mean, you know, good for grunge. It put Seattle on the map in the 90s, right?
Yeah.
But prior to that, Seattle still had a really hot music scene. It just wasn't really nationally recognized yet, yeah. I guess.
Yeah.
There were and are many, many, many talented players there, and to this day. But what it was like in the 80s was really more just heavy metal. I mean, seriously.